Thank you very much, Ernie. Hey, everyone. A very happy Sunday late afternoon, early evening on a gorgeous day here in Chicago. John Hanson filling in. I think I just said that. John Hanson. I've been saying filling in all week long, Roger Badish. I was in for Dean this morning. No, this is my show. I don't have to say filling in.
No, but you don't. You're in charge. And by the way, congratulations, because what you posted this morning says you have now filled in every show on this station.
I have. In the entire history of my filling in, I sure have. Is this your music you're playing, Roger?
No. I don't think I am.
Where's that coming from? I think that's coming from your computer.
Oh, I know what that is. Never mind. Sorry.
What are you playing there? Are you watching The Sandlot over there?
Yeah, I am. So here's a habit.
All right.
Back when I was teaching, I always had the sound off on my phone. Always.
Uh-huh.
Because when the kids' phones would ring, I'd be able to say, hold on a second.
So that was your ringer?
I need to call you back. Thank you. Bye.
Roger.
So
I'm so glad we got moved to Sunday so that you could be our newsman, Raj.
I'm hitting every button on the board because that's where I think sound is coming from. The phone is the last place I expected the sound to be coming from, and it's usually off in here.
Yeah.
I apologize.
No, that's okay.
But it's a pretty cool song.
It's a great song. Could have been worse. Yes, filling in for Dean was like the last shift I had never done. This is my sixth year filling in. Six-year anniversary today. And, Roger, you were the news guy when I filled in for the first time.
You've done just about every news shift also.
I've done a lot of
them. As far as I go.
Yeah, for sure. So, hey, do you think you can sue a team if you think they are bad and they are hurting your well-being?
Well, one would think that in a state of emotional distress, that might be your first choice out of anger.
Right.
But I would imagine that a lawyer would probably say, find something else to do.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not saying would you win. I'm saying I guess you could do anything. So I got three crazy sports lawsuits to give you, which, by the way, I have to mention this. Dave Plyer just texted me individually and said, you've never filled in on the Lutheran Hour, which is true. So there you go.
all right. Now you've got to wait here another 6 years.
Exactly. All right. Sorry. Anyways, so crazy lawsuits in sports history involve, I don't know, Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington football team. A lot of people don't like him. And one of the reasons why is he actually sued a season ticket holder. So there was this longtime season ticket holder, and she had a big problem in 2008, like a lot of people did with the recession.
Mm-hmm.
The housing market crashed. She lost her money. So she asked them to waive a couple years off of her contract because, you sign big contracts for season tickets.
Sure.
And she asked to waive them. And instead of saying, that's fine, we'll find someone else to fill the seats, we'll let you out of your lease, they sued her back. And won. They sued her for the rest of her contract, the years that she had left, another like 10 years left on her deal, and then they charged her interest, attorney's fees, and
court
costs, nearly bankrupted her. So that was one team suing a fan.
Mm.
There's also the story of a Philadelphia Flyers fan who climbed into the penalty box to fight a Toronto Maple Leafs player. And they got into a fight, in the penalty box.
Oh, my gosh.
And he got beat up a little bit. The fan did. So what did the fan do?
Sued.
He sued. He sued the player that beat him up in the penalty box, the Maple Leafs and NHL. That didn't go very well. But I did find one story of a fan suing a team for emotional well-being, and it's a Chicago fan. A Chicago Bulls fan took out his dismay over Derrick Rose's extended absence. Remember when Derrick Rose got hurt the first time, the big time, in the first round of the playoffs? Well, then he missed all the subsequent following year, and a fan out of Peoria, Illinois, claimed that Rose's extended absence for the team has led to him suffering multiple mental breakdowns and emotional distress. And I'm not trying to make fun of anyone's issues, of course. Apparently, and he listed in the lawsuit, too, that he had grown obese. Is that another notification, Roger? Can you turn off your phone?
I'm trying.
You're a radio professional, and you've been doing this a long time.
The person who just did it should know better.
Okay, so anyways.
I need to sue them.
This person claims they gained a lot of weight over the season because Derrick Rose wasn't playing on the team.
Wait, he lost weight?
No, he gained weight.
Oh, gained weight. Okay,
stress.
Okay.
And again, I'm not poking fun at anyone.
Right.
I get it. But I don't think you get to sue an NBA team and a player. He sued the player for negligent behavior, saying that Rose hadn't felt mentally ready to take the floor yet. Remember that big following season when
right.
it was just back and forth? So
yeah.
he sued him. He didn't win, though, but that was the only one I can find of a fan suing a player or a team for being upset. I know a lot of Bears fans might feel that way today. 312-981-7200. That's the conversation. You can also text Roger.
We can get more sounds on the air here today.
But Roger, each week we do a question. Don't answer it because I want the listeners to get it.
Sure.
But each week we do a question of the day, and this week is a carryover from our show last week. So, in 2006, so this is a crazy question. You can get as many guesses as you want. 312-981-7200. I'll give you a couple. And here it is. In 2006, about 76,000 people did what? And 10 years later, only 44,000 Americans did the same thing. So in other words, Americans are doing way less of what every single year. And it's got a lot of people worried. 312-981-7200 if you know the answer to that. Got a lot of other fun questions along the way. And I'll tee up the show coming up next on WGN. John Hanson in here today for Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Thanks so much for joining us here. Yeah, normally we're on 3 to 5 on Saturday afternoons. At least we were through the summer and will continue to be. But, of course, Northwestern football and Chicago Blackhawks hockey moves things around a little bit. So here we are this week, today, Sunday, obviously, 5 to 7. And then next week, just if you've got your pencils and scorecards ready, we are on Saturday, back to the Saturday, but we are on from 6 to 8 p.m., coming up on the show today, we are going to be talking with Bob Boyd and Justin Smith, two attorneys for the Stogsdill Law Firm. And they handle, look, it's never fun to talk about divorce, but it's a really important thing to talk about. It is one of the number one reasons why people end up in front of a judge, and you want to be fully prepared and have the right professionals behind it. And there are a billion questions about divorce, and I know some of you have either been through it, are going through it, unfortunately, or considering initiating a divorce or about to go through a divorce. Well, there are really a lot of tips you need to know, including social media tips, that what you post on social media, whatever it may be, whatever you posted in the past, what you might post in the future, is really important in a divorce proceeding. So we've got some good tips for folks if they're getting ready or they're going through that process, what to avoid. And we're going to take your calls to 312-981-7200 for questions you may have regarding that. Our question of the day, which carried over from last week, has to do with a statistic about how many times Americans do what during a year. And the clue is, in 2006, 76,000 people every year in the United States did this. Whereas 10 years later, the last time we have hard data on this, 2016, 44,000 people a year did this. Let's go to Karen in Glen Ellen. Karen, good evening. How are you doing here today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Did you watch the Bears game, or did you do something fun?
We worked all day, but that was fun. It was beautiful.
Oh,
we were fine.
wasn't it so nice? A real fall day. So, all right,
oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
What do you think the number is?
Well, I was just wondering if it's less, obviously less people smoke. So that was my answer.
That's a great guess. That certainly has gone down. I think I'd be thrilled if only 44,000 Americans smoked. I just think those numbers are a little low. I don't have them in front of me. So that is not the answer. But that was a great opening guess, Karen. I appreciate your phone call, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, for sure. 312-981-7200. If you can guess what Americans have done in a single year, 76,000 in 2006, 44,000 in 2016. Patrick from Rolling Meadows, how's your day going today, Patrick?
Hey, it's going pretty smooth.
Do you watch the Bears?
No, I didn't get a chance. I'm at work right now.
You didn't miss anything. All right, Patrick, what's your guess?
Well, now that I just caught the numbers again, and I wanted to change my answer.
Okay.
I was going to say houses, but I'm thinking getting married.
Getting married. Boy, that is a great guess, too, and that is certainly on the slight decline, except for this year is a big jump because last year no one did. No, Patrick, that is not the answer, but that was another great guess. Thanks for trying. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good one. 312-981-7200. What are people doing less and less every single year? We've had a lot of texts coming on the line. You can't win if you text. We have one saying smoking. Another one, 708, says having babies, and I know the birth rate, I believe, is still declining in the United States ever so gradually, but no, that is not the correct answer. 312-981-7200 if you think you've got one. Let's go to Linda. Linda, you're on WGN. Where are you calling from, Linda?
Elk Grove Village.
Elk Grove Village. Hey, we did Elk Grove Village for your hometown. It was a real fun visit.
Yeah, it's a very fun town.
I went to see the elk, which was great. And by the way, I've lived in Chicagoland my entire life. Grew up in Downers Grove. Had no idea there were actually elk roaming around in Elk Grove Village. Well, not roaming around. They have a you know, they're caged in or whatever you want to call it. It's a big pasture. It's gorgeous. Anyways, Linda, what's your guess?
Donate a kidney.
Donate a kidney. What? That's a great answer. That is not correct. I wouldn't be surprised if those numbers are going up, but well, I don't really know. But, you know, that sounds like about right, like 44,000. That would be a good guess. Linda, that's not the answer, but that's my favorite guess so far. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Kathy in Wheaton. Kathy, how are you doing here today?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I love it. Love the western suburbs. Shout out to Wheaton from Downers Grove originally. Did you watch the Bears today? What'd you do?
yes, I did. But then when it started going downhill, I went out for pizza.
See, now there's a 180. You know, you're watching the Bears. It ain't going so hot. Yeah, against Aaron Rodgers. And you're like, you know what? I need the comfort food. I'm getting pizza. Where'd you get your pizza from?
You got it. Palermo's.
Oh, I love Palermo's.
Went out to the Southburg.
Oh, yeah. Love it. All right, Kathy, what's your guess?
Christmas cards.
Ooh, that's a good guess. Everyone is thinking so creatively here. That is not the answer, but that's a wonderful guess. And that is one of those other ones where I feel like, yes, I think Christmas cards are going down, but I think more than 44,000 people still send Christmas cards a year. I got 15 of them, so if some people are still...
God bless,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. Do you still send Christmas cards, Kathy, or no?
I do.
Yeah, see?
I do.
You and 44,000 other people. No, I'm just kidding.
But not as many.
Not as many, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have a great rest of your day. I hope we get the answer before the end of the show, okay?
We'll do. If not, I'll have another piece of pizza.
I like that.
Have a good one.
Yeah, you too, Kathy. I like Kathy. She manufactured her own happiness, right? Not going to get the answer. That's okay. 312-981-7200. 630, perhaps sensing a theme of what the show is. 630 texted in, getting divorced, which would be a great lead-in to the Stockdale Law Firm segment in the next half hour. But that is also not the answer. But those numbers kind of line up for me, too. Maybe a little bit low. So to recap the numbers again, in 2006, 76,000 people did this in America. 10 years later, only 44,000 Americans did this in a single year. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the phone lines. And is it Key? Am I saying that correctly, Kai? Hello?
Hello, Chief.
Chief.
Yeah.
Oh. Hey. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing okay. Just getting off work. I was thinking driving taxi cabs.
Driving taxi cabs. Oh, like with the inventions of Uber and Lyft, taxi cab drivers. No, that's not the answer. But that's a great guess. I appreciate it. Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you. Have a good day.
That's a good one. Let's go to Sherry. Sherry, you're on Let's Get Legal. Any guesses?
Exercising.
If 44,000 Americans are exercising, we got a big problem on our hands. I don't know. Do you think people are exercising less or do you think they're exercising more these days, Sherry?
Less.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe you're right. That is not the answer. Where are you calling from today, Sherry?
North Aurora.
Well, thanks for the phone call.
I thought it was 44,000 less people.
Oh, no, 44,000 total.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay. Yeah, that's good. Have a good one, Sherry. We appreciate it. Let's go to Peter in Lake Geneva. Hey, Peter, how are you doing today?
Great. How are you, sir?
Wait, hold on. Lake Geneva. Are you a Packers fan or a Bears fan?
Bears.
Oh.
Disappointed. Wait, disappointed.
Do you live in Lake Geneva? Have you always lived up there?
Grew up in Elk Grove Village.
Oh, hey. Nice connection. That's why you're the Bears. And even though you're north of the border now, you stuck with them.
Yes, sir.
That didn't work out so well. All right. What's your guess, Peter?
My guess is ringing the bell for donations for the Salvation Army at Christmas time.
Hey, that's a good guess. I know that's gone down a little bit. A lot of people have gone to the Salvation Army's digital donations. And maybe they don't need as many ringers or less people have volunteered. That's a great guess. That is not the answer. But I always love the around this time of year, we start to focus, and WGN usually does a great partnership with the Salvation Army to get some ringers. Great guess, but that's not the answer, Peter. I'm sorry.
You got it. Have a great night.
Yeah, go Bears. Let's go to Margaret in Michigan. Margaret, how are you doing here tonight?
Good. How are you?
Good. Do you have a guess for what 44?
I would guess.
Yeah.
Being a long-haul truck driver.
Being a long-haul truck driver. And boy, I'll tell you, if that was the answer, unfortunately it isn't. The numbers might even be less this year. I know that's a huge issue right now with the supply side chain economics. Can't find all the truck drivers. That is not the answer, Margaret. I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Have a great night. Thanks for listening, and thanks for calling in to Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Guess what? We don't have a winner yet so far. But that's why it's the question of the show. The whole show, we're going to try and answer this throughout. That's okay. We will get there. I guess the only hint, should I offer a hint, Iridian? Yeah. The only hint is, this is a legal show. This is a show about law. And the answer to this question will follow that as well. In some way, some capacity. It's in that realm. It's in that field. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. The phone lines are still lighting up. The texters are, too, about our question of the day. We'll carry that over at 6 o'clock, so stay tuned. And hopefully we get an answer before the end of the show at 7. Joining us now from the Stockdale Law Firm to talk about social media, its effect on divorce, and plenty of other things along the way, we have Bob Boyd and Justin Smith, two attorneys. Gentlemen, thanks for coming on with us here today.
Thank you. Nice to see you again.
I got a dumb question for you, and maybe one of you guys knows the answer. Are there more divorces filed the morning after a big Bears loss against the Green Bay Packers, or no?
I don't know the statistics on that, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Right. Someone's already upset about something, and that's what, you know, pushes them over the edge.
Would do it. It would do it.
Yeah. Just, I wanted to know, actually, because a lot of people talked about during the pandemic that we were going to see this wave of divorce proceedings happen either during it or right afterwards. Have you seen anything like that, Justin, or no?
Yeah, there was definitely an uptick in filings, kind of once things started opening back up, for mm-hmm. sure. During the pandemic, courthouses were mostly shut down.
Right.
They were open for emergency purposes and some other basic proceedings, but once things started opening up, there was definitely an uptick.
Right, because a lot of people talked like, oh, there was going to be, and we didn't know if it would be borne out, but a little uptick for sure. All right, so let's pivot here about talking about social media and divorce. This is one of those topics where I feel like it's a no-brainer, but so many people do silly things on the internet while they're going, or, you know, they did it beforehand, before they were going through the divorce proceedings, that can bite them on the other end. So, Bob, do you see that a lot, that what happens on social media ends up in a court of law?
It absolutely does. And when people come in to see us, one of the first things we explain to them is, get off of social media. Whatever you're doing, stop it.
Mm-hmm.
It nothing good can come of it. Even if the two of you are amicably resolving your differences and working toward a resolution, social media is not going to help it. Things come up and it hurts people's feelings and things go south very quickly.
Can things you said be introduced as evidence in court?
On social media?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. There are some certain foundational problems that you can overcome. You can subpoena emails and text messages if you push it far enough. And, mm-hmm. and those things, yeah, certainly can come into evidence. It's a little tricky to get it done, but it happens.
Yeah, for sure. So is it about trying to, not that you would ever want to delete evidence, but deleting old posts or stuff? I mean, I guess you can't really truly recommend that, but maybe just wiping a lot of things clear, Justin, is a good idea.
No, I mean, I think if you're, yeah, I mean, depending on your circumstances coming into it, but yeah, you can go scrub your social media.
It's like looking for a job. I mean, honestly,
yeah,
I mean, anyone can see that stuff, so it's good to give yourself a little bit of a clean bill of health. So what sorts of things do you recommend? Is it just shutting down social media altogether, or what?
I mean, absolutely. That's if, especially if it's going to be a contentious divorce, and you know that pretty much, you know, at the first meeting, you got to just shut down, go mm-hmm. off of it completely. That's the best advice. But if you are going to stay on,
right, a lot of people feel like they are tied to it and it's part of who they are. I don't know who those people are, but they feel that way. What are some other tips you can give people if they can't get all the way off?
You got to make yourself private. You got to defriend your spouse's family and her friends and all of her acquaintances, and because you don't want, because they'll still follow even if you've, you know, defriended your spouse. But there's I call Facebook Devil Book. And
I think a lot of people are starting to agree with you there.
Nothing good can come of it.
What is it, Bob? Is it just that you're afraid of what you might post being used as evidence, or is it other things, or is it just also the idea of just severing that relationship is good for your mental well-being too?
Well, that, we don't get into the psychological aspect of it, and what is a good practice. Certainly getting away from it is a good idea when you're in the middle of an emotional proceeding like a divorce. You just don't realize how far-reaching some of the things you do can be. I've had situations where an email was sent to a friend, and the friend then distributed it to other friends.
Forwarded it on to other
then,
people, yeah.
Who then or happened to be friends of the spouse. And it you just don't know how big the circle is going to be or who has access to it. I've also had situations where, and I don't quite know the logistics of all of this, mm-hmm. but phone accounts are linked and not through the client's account, but through a child's account on the same program or same plan, mm-hmm. They can have access to those kinds of things. With Illinois being a no-fault divorce state, it's not that the fault necessarily is going to cause a problem,
okay.
But it just complicates things in moving things along. And certainly in custody cases, you just don't want to have that depiction of you come forward.
I mean, it's more than just the social media. I mean, you mentioned accounts. You're talking about your relationship with the cloud, right? And things along those lines too, right, Justin?
Yeah, I mean, it's there forever. And once it's out, you can't pull that back. You can't unring that bell, so to speak. And a lot of people, I find, and this is even leading up to the decision to file for divorce, they view social media as kind of a support system,
mm-hmm.
in their own personal life.
Right.
Where they think they're getting counseling and they're posting things.
I think a lot of people, some legitimately connect with people maybe they haven't talked to in years, and they feel like that's a great place to do that and to get some emotional support.
Yeah, and vent, you know, certain opinions about certain things and maybe get feedback just to feel that affirmation. And mm-hmm. there's other people out there that feel that way. But all of those things can and will probably come back to haunt you in your divorce.
I don't want to, like, obviously get into too specific of situations, but are there, like, would it be like, oh, this person posted on Facebook, a disparaging opinion of the other person, and that can be brought up? What sorts of things do you worry about seeing in court through the social media or through connected devices?
Well, once you're in court and you're trying to depict a particular view of your client, you want to present the best foot. You mm-hmm. put the best foot forward. And when you start seeing disparaging remarks about the other spouse, just bombarding them, I explain to clients, it's easy to explain one little glitch or one little problem. And even the second one, you can kind of explain away most instances. But at some point, when you've got 15 or 20 of these things and you have to explain them all away, it starts building a case for the other side.
Looks like a pattern.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's just a bad habit to get into. It's not a place to vent.
Do you guys recommend, if someone's about to start divorce proceedings or they're maybe in it, I mean, cutting off all contact whatsoever with that spouse? I mean, easier said than done, because there's got to be communication. Or is it about documenting what that communication was between the two of you, just in case they ever try to use something against you in the future?
Yeah, you definitely want to limit your communications. But if you have minor children involved, you have to.
Yeah, you got to talk about
who's
that stuff.
Who's picking them up from school? Who's taking them to hockey today? Those communications have to occur,
mm-hmm.
But you really have to limit it. And you know, if your kids are involved, stick to the kids,
right?
Don't start talking about money and things. And there are programs out there that courts use and parents use that just kind of corral all of their communications in one central mm-hmm. program, and you can use that. And there's even like tone meters within that program. So if you send it kind of reads your emails, and,
right.
you know, little red flags come up on the words you're using and things. And
right.
so there are programs out there that can aid in that communication. And if you do have to communicate, that's a good place to use. It's called Our Family Wizard for those who might want to know.
Okay.
But it's a useful program.
Our Family Wizard. Okay. Bob, is there something to be said about also, let's say it's not an amicable split and you feel like you are being the victim of this repetitive behavior that we've talked about. Maybe you're the spouse that you're not posting anything, but someone else is. And some of that information, you know, your spouse is posting things. Some of that information could be useful. Is it a matter of documenting it, talking with your lawyer and showing them what's happening, screen grabbing, either harassing messages or disparaging messages? Is that something that the spouse who is on the receiving end of that needs to be cognizant of too?
Absolutely. And it almost goes without saying that we don't have to explain to clients to send that to us. They do that
They do it right
routinely.
Away. Yeah.
But once in a while you have to say, you know, you're telling me this. Send the emails to me. Let me take a look. Let me see what it says. And some of them are just horrible rants.
Right.
And if necessary, that sometimes can be useful, particularly in custody proceedings and where you're trying to show the attitude or behavior of the other spouse. Kind of recently in the news, you know, emails sort of last forever.
Right.
And they come back to haunt you. And the sooner you can get control of that, tell our clients, don't do that. If you want to vent, give me a call. We'll talk through it. But don't, however you may have been communicating in the past, it's not necessarily the way it has to be going forward. There's now a referee who can look at this stuff and say, well, that's not appropriate. Don't be that person. Be on the other side of it.
For sure. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. 312-981-7200. If you do have questions, you can text them in. You can call them on in. Most importantly, visit StogsdilleLaw.com. That's StogsdilleLaw.com. Or call them at 630-462-9500. 630-462-9500. Do not navigate this process on your own. Go with trusted people who know what they're doing, like Bob and Justin and the folks at StogsdilleLaw.com. More after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Continuing our conversations with Bob Boyd and Justin Smith from Stogsdill Law Firm. Just talking in the break about the case, it's been about a month or two now, about the judge who initially ruled right here in Chicago that the mother couldn't have custody of the child or see the child because she wasn't vaccinated. It caused quite an uproar. The judge went back and reversed the decision ultimately, or took it on back. And not necessarily to comment on that, because that opens up a whole other can of worms. But, I mean, I guess that's one of the things that is impossible to prepare for. And COVID has really thrown a loop on a lot of this stuff, Bob. And Justin, it's that it's a different world right now. And there's a lot of confusion about what could happen and what a judge might say or not say.
Exactly. It's not even just confusion among lawyers,
right?
or among people in general, but what judges are going to do. Judges don't necessarily, or at least early on, didn't have a view as to what exactly was going to be entailed in everything that was being presented.
Right.
They're kind of playing it. They've got a better grasp now, but
right.
They were just playing it by ear as they
we
went along
were.
As well.
Yeah.
Who knew what was the right thing to do? And now that vaccinations are available,
right.
that creates a new can of worms as to whether or not you have to be vaccinated or not vaccinated.
Well, and just right now, obviously, it's kids of a certain age can get the vaccine. Soon that might be expanded to others. I imagine we're going to see more court cases about divorced parents trying to make the decisions. And, like, I think everyone's got the best interest of the kids in mind, but might be a differing opinion, and that's going to cause some confusion, I imagine.
Absolutely. And whether or not you want to, you were going to be operating remotely, or you were going to go into classrooms, and whether you're going to wear a mask or not wear a mask, within a family, those issues can eventually kind of be resolved. But when you're in litigation and you take one position, the other side takes the other position, then it puts judges in difficult spots.
I can't even imagine. Justin, we were talking kind of at the top about how court cases were really kind of shut down for a while, except for emergencies. Where are you at right now? Where are divorce courts right now? Are they back full steam ahead, or is there a backlog of cases that they're trying to get through?
There's definitely a backlog, and it varies county to county. We are in DuPage County, and the judges there realize that they do have a backlog, so mm-hmm. they try to get you in to the extent they can. In-person proceedings, things tend to resolve themselves faster and more efficiently if you're in person than trying to do the Zoom stuff. But there's definitely a backlog, and just now scratching that surface.
So if someone had like a timeline in mind, let's say they're going to call you tomorrow and want to start some process, I know it's individual by case and a lot of things matter, but like roughly speaking, how long does the process take now from start to finish?
It's impossible to say.
Okay.
It is really. But I think right now, if you were starting your case, your timeline would be pretty similar to pre-pandemic.
Okay, which is what, generally? I don't even know.
Well, if there are children involved in the case, your case, the custody portion of your case is going to be resolved within 18 months by Supreme Court rule. So that's
18 months, okay, a year and a half.
The outlier. Now, most cases don't take that long. Some take longer, but that's kind of a general guideline.
Yeah. You know, just general advice for someone that's sitting there tonight. And look, it's never a fun process, and it's probably something that people, you know, they obviously didn't enter a marriage to end up divorced, and that's a really difficult part of life, of course. Mom, do you want any advice for folks right now who are kind of weighing that decision, or maybe they know they're about to do it? First steps that they can do to ensure as smooth a process as possible.
It really varies from case to case to case. When people come in, I give them advice, financial advice, custody advice, those types of things. And I explain to them the one thing I can't tell you is whether or not you're ready to be divorced. That's an emotional decision. It's one that you have to think about and ultimately come up with your position. Once you make that decision, you know better the spouse that you're about to start proceedings with and what that's going to entail. And people can come in and tell me, you know, we've got this all worked out, until you start writing down what they think is going to be the resolution, and you see that they're really not on the same page at all. Other people come in and they think it's going to be a battle, and they're not nearly as far apart as they think they are.
Right.
So it's really hard to predict how long it's going to last. But when you make the emotional decision to start the proceedings, realize it could be a year. It could be 18 months. And sometimes in instances, it can be even beyond that. But realize it's a process, and it's going to take some time. And you just have to have the emotional strength to get through it.
Right. And Justin, I know you guys aren't the psychologists here. You're not trying to work people through all the emotions of it. But obviously, you're seeing people in very emotional states. I imagine, at least, I don't know if you have resources in the office, or at least having been through it and worked, helped other people through it, I imagine there is a sort of comfort, at least knowing that you know what you're doing. And there's, I think a lot of people, before they decide to, go through with it, they worry so much about the future. At least signing up with you guys and starting that process, there is at least some comfort there knowing that, hey, I've seen a lot of stuff. I've represented a lot of different people. I know how to handle these situations.
Absolutely. You have to be realistic with them from the get-go, as far as what's the time frame you're looking at, what kind of information you're going to need from them.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge is king in our business. If you're the spouse who doesn't have access to the tax returns, if you don't have access to the banking records, that's an issue.
Yeah,
we're gonna have to get have their cooperation from the other side to get that information. So if we have to send out discovery requests, that's going to take time.
Yeah,
so you need to explain that to your client up front. And as they see those milestones hit, within the first 30 days, this is going to happen, and they kind of feel comfortable, or at least more comfortable in the process.
You mentioned like banking records and stuff like that. Even for like the happiest married couple out there, I think everyone, both partners in the relationship, should really just ascertain to know exactly like login information, account information. Is that something you advise for every single couple out there to have an equal footing, at least in terms of the financing and the banking, in terms of knowing where it comes from, where it's going?
By the time they come to see us, those lines have already been drawn. There are couples that cooperate and have all of that information. There are others where, I think it just happens organically. One person takes over the finances and how the bills are going to get paid and what accounts things are going to go into, and the other kind of pays less attention. Those are difficult spots, but you try and get them caught up as quickly as possible. Once you get the financial information, then you can kind of lead them along and explain to them, good news, bad news. This is probably what's going to happen.
Right. All right, Bob Boyd, Justin Smith, that's our time today. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Hopefully answered some of your questions. Great text coming in, great questions as well. Bob Boyd and Justin Smith from Stogsdale Law Firm. Again, you can call them at, write this down, 630-462-9500, 630-462-9500, or visit StogsdaleLaw.com. That's StogsdilleLaw.com. News next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Just a little bit, Professor Robin Fretwell Wilson of the University of Illinois will join us to talk about religious exemptions to the vaccine for government employees and private employees and why that distinction makes a huge difference. Looking forward to a very good conversation there. But our question of the day and the week is, in 2006, 76,000 Americans did this, whereas 10 years later, only 44,000 Americans did this in a single year. It's a legal show. That's your hint for now. Let's go to Rachel and Roselle. Rachel, how are you doing this evening?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. What is your guess?
My guess is illegally download music.
Illegally downloading music, right? Because you'd think that now that we have streaming music services and YouTube, less people are going to do the legal Napster or whatever the cases were. That's not the answer. It's a great guess, though.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I appreciate you trying. All right, let's go to Therese. Therese, are you, you're in Wisconsin. Are you a Packers fan?
I am not.
Oh, well, good. Well, I mean, good that you can continue on the show tonight. Bad that you're a Bears fan, I guess, like we all are. Okay. What is your guess, Therese?
My guess is writing a will.
Oh, boy, that's a great guess. It has a legal angle to it. And unfortunately, that is not the answer, but that's a really good one, though. I appreciate you calling.
Thank you.
All right. What a great one. It's legally, that's around the right angle, right? I will say, and we've had a few texters be like, well, you know, America has 300 some million people, right? So if we're talking about 44,000 people did this in 2016, it's a pretty small percentage of the population, like really small. So a lot of the things we've talked about or guesses have been good ones because you're taking into account what the trend would be to have a big decrease in something. But still, 44,000, not a lot of people. Let's go to Julie. Julie in Evanston. We just did another Your Hometown in Evanston, by the way. We love Evanston, Julie.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we loved it. Oh, I went to the Frio Gelato place. Oh, it was so good. I don't know if you've tried it.
Yes, I have. It's awesome.
Oh, it's Argentinian gelato. I am tasting it right now. I wish. All right. What is your guess, Julie?
Adopting a baby.
Adopting a baby. That's a great guess. There's a lot of legal ramifications with that. And that I think maybe that number sounds about right to me. But, Julie, that's not the answer.
Okay, thanks anyway.
Yeah, I know. Julie's getting frustrated. I can tell that in her voice. I'm sorry, everyone. Well, if we had the right answer, we'd get it. 312-981-7200 if you do have any guess. We had a guess on the 708 saying the same thing. Adopted children. Keep in mind, this is a legal show, and it has to do with what happens in a court of law. Ooh, that's another clue. Has to do with what happens in a court of law. 312-981-7200. Had a great guest from the 815, and a few other people texted this in as well. Passing the bar exam or becoming a lawyer. No, those are also great guesses, but they unfortunately are not the answer. Phone lines are lighting up. I think my latest hint may have really helped out. 312-981-7200. Let's get Barbara on the line. Barbara, where are you? Hey, Barbara, where are you calling from tonight?
Oh, hi. Well, I'm in Chicago on my way from Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. Where were you? Did you go to the wrong stadium for the Bears game and you went up to Packers land? And...
No, we had to listen to the grueling experience on the phone with other Packer fans.
What's your guess, Barbara?
My guess is attorneys.
No, that's a great guess, right? Like how many attorneys there are in general. But no.
Yeah.
But you're
no.
But you're kind of getting close. I don't know.
Okay.
Barbara, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll probably get another question or two in. Let's go to Catherine. Hey, Catherine.
Hey, my guess is taking up the sport of curling.
I don't know what that has to do with the court of law, but I think that law would be a lot more fun if it was just settled on the curling court. That's a great guess, but that is not the answer. Let's go to Shelley. Shelley, you're in Arlington Heights. What's your guess, Shelley?
I'm guessing got married.
Got married. No, that's not the answer. I think marriages are down, though, right? I think that your inclination about, you know, way less people doing it than before is right. But that is not the answer. I appreciate the phone call, though. 312-981-7200. One last guess before we got to take a break. Wanda, you're on WGN. What's your guess?
My.
Whoa, we lost Wanda. She was about to say something so profound. Maybe the correct answer. The phone lines are lighting up, and we got to take a quick commercial break. Tell you what, afterwards, we might get another call in, maybe one, before we talk to Professor Wilson on vaccine mandates and religious exemptions. Here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Thanks so much for joining us on this Sunday early afternoon as we head into the evening hours. John Hansen here on WGN. All right. I know everyone is, I don't know, there's so many questions and topics we've had about masks and vaccines, but we're really entering an interesting phase here of employers now requiring people to have a vaccine to show up for work. This has been, you know, litigated out for a lot of people, but we're still kind of in untested waters. So joining us right now is the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs for the University of Illinois System, Robin Fretwell Wilson. Professor Wilson, thanks for hopping on with us today.
Oh, happy to do it, John. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to bring you on to talk specifically about religious exemptions for the COVID-19 vaccine, because religious exemptions for vaccines is nothing new. It's required, right, at least from what my interpretation is, for employers to at least allow a religious exemption. Can you talk a little bit about the history of that and why that is the case?
Yeah, well, let me start with the most important legal guidance, which is the U.S. Constitution. So in the First Amendment, we have the right to free exercise of religion. And of course, we have on the opposite side of that, too, that the government cannot establish a religion. And so it's like in the space between those two clauses is sort of where the whole question of religious exemption sits. You know, so let's say that that I'm somebody who believes in faith healing and that I don't believe in modern medicine, but I'm doing my job, I'm working. The Constitution says that I have the right to free exercise of religion. And it means that, you know, in effect, there's going to be a burden on the government to explain why it needs to burden that free exercise. Okay, my view that I don't need to be vaccinated or should not be vaccinated. It gets a little bit interesting during the COVID era, John, because we've had these cases that I call the church worship, you know, the worship, COVID worship cases. But basically, at one time, the Supreme Court seemed to be following a very famous case about peyote. You may know this case, the Smith decision. Okay, so, you know, weirdly, you don't smoke peyote, you ingest it. And there's like a set of Native Americans that would ingest a kind of hallucinogen and it would bring them closer to God. So that was the basic idea. And they were ingesting peyote in Oregon. They end up, getting fired from their jobs because it's illegal drug use. Rocks all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. For a very long time, the court, before that, for decades before that, had said that a burden on religion would be subject to the highest scrutiny. In other words, the government was likely, you know, to have its rule tossed. And then in Smith, they sort of backwalked in a decision by Justice Scalia, right, who's like the arch conservative. And he said, well, we can't have religious people all be a rule unto themselves. So you can't be like having these people over here doing their peyote and those people over there doing their animal sacrifice. So, you know, if it's a neutral rule of general applicability, Smith said, government's likely to win. But during COVID, we had all these cases about churches being closed, you know, and you'll remember mm-hmm. in Nevada, there'll be like a church that's completely empty and then a casino that's clogged with people and it's just running full time,
right.
You know, and you're like, what? And so a lot of, you know, religious people brought suit in New York and in California, Nevada, all over the country under Smith and said, well, there's an exception that says you can't target religion. And long story short, this court has said that, yeah, this stuff is looking like targeting of religion because you're treating religion, quote, more harshly than other people. So what's that mean for the vaccines? Well, if you start giving out a bunch of medical exemptions, and you're not, you know, respecting people's religious views, that's going to look, I think, like the COVID worship cases. It's going to look like you're harshing on religion. and not these other things. And from a legal perspective, that means it'll get kicked into high scrutiny.
Because they're going to allow some medical exemptions for legitimate reasons, right? Like allergies or adverse reaction fears or, I don't know, some immunocompromised level where it's a dangerous situation. If there's a bunch of those allowed, but not for religion, then that would kick it into high gear as opposed to if it was only a religious issue. And it would just... It would give it more scrutiny is what you're suggesting. And then.
Yeah, it would. Okay. It would make it harder for the government to hold its rule. Okay. So, now, private employers, by the way, don't have to, you know, they're not subject to the U.S. Constitution. They're subject, as you said before we started the interview, with Title VII. So they, you know, Congress sort of grabs them in a different part of the legal apparatus. But for a state employer like mine, that's government.
Mm-hmm. What about, and I would imagine for city employees, like we're talking about police a lot here in, and I know Los Angeles too, they're saying that upwards of a quarter of Los Angeles police officers are going to claim religious exemption. Would they fall under this, under the, as government employees under that rule?
Yeah, I think they do. You know, unless they're somehow, you know, being provided lock key by some private company like a rent-a-cop or something. But yeah, if they're like straight up government employees, they claim First Amendment protection and protection under the California Constitution too.
And you would argue, or I guess what you're saying is that the ultimate ruling may be that there's really not, you can't do like a shibboleth, like with a government employee. You can't ask them to provide records of how often they've gone to church or notes from pastors or, some sort of test for a government employee to prove that they are indeed religious.
Yeah, so they can't really go trying to test because it very quickly will slide into establishing, in a sense, one view of religion as proper and another not. Okay?
Right.
And it's just not for the government to weigh on these things because who knows which of these views is ultimately the one that accords with God. Who knows, you know? So we don't, in this country anyhow, want to try to go there. There is a piece of it, though, that is sort of interesting. I mean, we might test hypocrisy. And what I mean by that is we might test, okay, you say you can't get a vaccine, but then you're getting something, or let's say you claim that you can't take modern medical care, but then we surreptitiously find out that, you know, you're using shots for your knee, okay? Mm-hmm. So that the way you've stated your claim and your actual action don't line up, okay? But I think people are really loath to look at that too, because that feels very invasive and disrespectful of people's stated views. But you might have somebody try this to test the sincerity of it that way.
What about if you have taken other vaccines? I mean, I guess you could argue that you've changed your religious views since you were a child or the last vaccine you've taken, right? And that's mm-hmm. a hard test to overcome too.
Yeah, you have the right to be a defector from your own view. It's sort of funny. You have a right to change your religious view. So let's say you were always Roland Baptist and now you're like, you know, Scientologists, you can do that. And the Scientologists, you know, are one of the groups that at least some members don't believe in modern medicine. They believe in faith healing. And I'll tell you, John, you know, religious people have gotten extraordinary amounts of protection for religious views. I have a piece called By Faith Alone and a whole book that's about the contested place of religion and family law. And, you know, state lawmakers have given exceptions to treating your child when they need medical care. And those exceptions are real and very costly, actually. They're more than what the Constitution requires. But like in one state, Idaho, where I was working recently, the infant mortality rate in one community, the followers of Christ, was 10 times the rest of the state. 10 times. You could go into this community and count the number of child graves. And that's the degree to which we've protected religious claims. Wow. I think COVID has really tested our commitment to that, because I think we realize if children die in the followers of Christ community, and I'm not trying to sound harsh, but it is a kind of, well, that's them, right, sort of feeling. That's their community. Who are we to say? But in COVID, if you're not getting vaccinated, you know, I think President Biden is right that it does implicate all of us. Now, that doesn't tell you what to do. OK, it doesn't tell you whether to give an exemption. But I do think COVID has changed our appetite, let's just say, John, for trying to respect everybody's views, even if some of us are like, whoa, that seems sort of kooky.
All right. So that is the take on government employees claiming a religious exemption to getting the vaccine. The professor stating that for many parts, the government doesn't really have too much rights for government employees to dig into their claims of religious exemption. And that's why a lot of folks, again, in Los Angeles, firefighters and police officers claiming religious exemption, thinking that the government won't go after that exemption. It'll be interesting to have to see what she has to say about private employees. Most of us are not government employees. So is that different? The professor will talk about that after the news on WGN. Good Sunday evening, everyone. Welcome back to Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. John Hanson here, continuing our conversation with Professor Wilson about vaccine exemptions for religion. And in the last segment, Professor Wilson, just to kind of sum it up, you were talking about government employees mainly, and that they really do have quite an extensive right to claim religious exemption for a vaccine, and the government doesn't really have too much at their disposal or really the right to question someone too deeply about that religious exemption. But when it comes to private employees, it's a whole nother ballgame. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, the source of it in this particular case for private employees comes from Title VII. You know, and Title VII is one of our foundational civil rights laws. It applies to employers of a certain size. So you have to have more than 15 or more employees. And it says that employers have to reasonably accommodate an employee's religious belief or practice. Okay. And so think about the archetypal case. You have somebody who at 4 o'clock wants to take a moment in their office and pray, you know, on a mat. Okay. Mm-hmm. We ought to try to do that for those folks, right? We let people take smoking breaks, right? People, you know, and so I think the impulse behind Title VII is exactly right. It gets harder when you get to questions like this because you're thinking, okay, what's your religious belief or practice? Okay, so now it's not to be vaccinated when I'm just trying to say how it would get tripped, okay? Mm-hmm. But it'd be something like your employer says everybody here to keep everybody safe has to be vaccinated. And then this person says, but I can't do that because God directs me otherwise. Now we want to try to accommodate that religious belief or practice. Now, in Title VII, there are safeguards for the employer. It says that it has to be a reasonable accommodation, and it can't introduce an undue burden to the employer. And I give you, if you're interested in what those kind of things mean, I can give you a pretty good case. Okay, so like an example of that is, imagine you have Let's shift to a different topic that people have deep religious beliefs about, and that would be abortion. Okay, so this very famous case out of the Third Circuit called Shelton. In Shelton, we had a woman, a nurse, and she didn't want to perform abortions. And so the question was, could she be transferred to the NICU? Would that be a reasonable accommodation of her religious belief that as a nurse, she could not take a life? But then it has to work itself out on the ground. So let's say I need to go to the NICU, John, and you're already attached there. Do we suddenly kick John out of the NICU so that Robin's religious belief about abortion can be sort of staffed around? You see the problem?
Mm-hmm.
It implicates the organization's operations. It implicates coworkers. It might make scheduling a real, you know, task for the employer, and it gets sticky fast.
So if it really puts an undue burden on the employer to move things around, pay people differently, shift their operations, they're offered a little bit more cover in this case.
Yeah, in a sense that it's like it's a, you know, we like to say in the law balancing test, but really Title VII is that. I mean, the balance is It's like the prayer mat, the person with the prayer mat. We want to try to do this up to a point, but then if it's like going to make it impossible for all the rest of this stuff to work, the employer has a backstop there. They have the ability to say, no, I can't make this work. And then go to your COVID now for a second and your vaccines. Let's say we lived in a society where everybody was down with the vaccine except for one dude. Okay, one guy. Could we staff around that and afford one exemption? Probably. Can we afford, I don't know. I mean, when it gets to be a wide scale set of people trying to say we're going to jump out of a public health protection, I think it starts to become unworkable really fast.
So based on what I'm hearing, if it is a, you know, a mass amount of people, and that's going to put an undue burden on the employer who cannot in good conscience, or I guess in good practice, accommodate for all those people, then those employees may be susceptible to getting fired.
Yeah. You know, there's one more statute we didn't get to, John. I mean, I think that's right. Okay. Let me tell you about one more statute, though. You remember Hobby Lobby?
Yes.
Remember, you know, contraceptive coverage case? Well, you know, the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act doesn't apply to state laws. But if a state law said state mandated a vaccine, in the 23 states now that have Religious Freedom Restoration Acts, the question would be, does that act overstep or override the state law mandate? Okay, now I'm not now talking about a private employer throwing this on people. I'm talking about a set of lawmakers saying private employers can. Okay, so in Hobby Lobby, you'll remember that Hobby Lobby, the company, did not have to provide contraceptive coverage to its women employees or men who have wives or somebody in their life, daughters that want them or whatever, didn't have to do that. And basically because the state couldn't show, or the government, U.S. government couldn't show a compelling interest in that, they bracketed that question and they had a less restrictive means. And the less restrictive means, ironically, had been created by President Obama, who said that for religious nonprofits like Notre Dame, you know, the federal, you know, exchange insurer under the ACA would provide the coverage so that women, you know, got the thing with no hassle, he said, no wait, and religious person wasn't put in the position of doing it. Okay, so what's all that mean here? It means that if the state threw down a legal mandate and they have a RFRA, religious people would be able to come back and say, hey, yeah, so I have the right under that not to have to do this. And mm-hmm. you, the state, are going to have to explain why you have a compelling interest in my being vaccinated, me personally, and not giving me an exception. And you have no less restrictive means. And then that takes you back to one of the subjects of your other radio shows, John, which is masking. So like, if you can't throw down the mandate on particular people because of RFRA, then the less restrictive means is to say, okay, how about you test every single day and wear a mask? Maybe that is kind of like the prayer mat. We're trying to respect people's wishes about things like vaccine, but they have to kind of step up to it too, right? They have to make a concession to try to make it work.
I imagine that we are going to see a handful of court cases in the coming future about this. I imagine you anticipate that too.
Yeah. No, I do. I think they're coming. There's no way they're not. I mean, so I think one thing to remember, you know, there's a lot here for democracy and transparency and realizing that even in the middle of a pandemic, to quote one of our justices, you know, we haven't put the Constitution away. We don't put it away.
Look, it's an infectious disease that moves through a community quick. Constitutional law doesn't move that quick, but we still have to honor it and respect it and that process. And that's hard. Professor, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure, John. Okay, talk to you soon anytime.
All right, Professor Wilson there. It was a great conversation. It gets really heady, right, about all the previous jurisprudence and laws that have been written. But I think the general takeaway is if you have a private employer, you're way less likely to be able to claim religious exemption. You can certainly try for a vaccine, but it could face more scrutiny, that question. And if a lot of people at your workplace claim a religious exemption as a private employee, that could cause some issues. And your employer kind of has a right to say, well, that doesn't work. But if you're a government employee and it's the government asking you, it's a whole different ballgame. Just some of the nuance discussions here about religious exemptions. And again, the reason I asked and wanted to have the professor talk about it is there's so many cases right now. New York just ruling a federal judge saying that a state cannot impose a vaccine mandate on healthcare workers without allowing their employers to consider religious exemption requests. And also stories of pastors in all sorts of places across the country posting form letters for workers anywhere. It doesn't have to be part of his congregation seeking religious exemption. He has a form that you can fill out. It's been downloaded 40,000 times. So that's going to this is going to be a huge issue. And the courts obviously don't move as quick as COVID-19. And it's just one of the fascinating things we have moving forward. All right, 312-981-7200. We got a break, and then I do not want to end this show without an answer to the question of the week. And the question of the week, which is a carryover from last week. So we've gone now almost two shows without an answer to this. In 2006, 76,000 Americans did blank. 10 years later, only 44,000 Americans did blank. It's a legal question. It has something to do with legal aspects of what happens in court. And we'll hopefully get the answer after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. And we love to have a question of the week. This one started last week. We didn't get an answer. Still haven't gotten one yet. In 2006, about 76,000 Americans did blank. 10 years later, about 44,000 Americans did blank in a single year. Let's go to Barb. Barb calling from Arizona. How you doing, Barb?
Hi, John. It's so nice to talk to you.
It's so nice to talk to you, too. How's the weather in Arizona?
Oh, beautiful.
It actually was a beautiful day here, so.
I'm glad. I know my family lives there, so I like when it's nice there, too. Yeah. It's great.
We appreciate your generosity. All right, Barb, what is your guess?
My guess is get a divorce.
That's a great guess. And we had Stogsdale Law Firm on, so that would have worked out perfectly.
That's what I thought. Was that a little hint, a little clue, but that's not it.
That's not it, though. But Barb, that's so sweet of you to call. Thank you so much.
And I just have to say, when I turn WGN on, and it's your voice, it just brightens my day. I just love when you're on.
Oh, Barb.
Thank you so much.
Oh, Barb, thanks so much. Did my mom call you to pay you to call her?
Yeah, we just hung up.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Barb. Have a great one, and I appreciate the kind words.
You too. Bye-bye. Right.
Let's go to John. John, you're on WGN. What's your guess, John?
People representing themselves in court.
Oh, that's a really fun answer. It's not right, as you can probably guess by my tone. But, that is interesting. Because, right, you don't think a lot of people probably do that. You know, they don't advise you to do that if possible. And you would say, oh, yeah, 44,000, that sounds about right. Ooh, that's a great guess, John. That's not the answer, though. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the guess. Let's go to Teresa. Hey, Teresa, good evening.
Hi.
You're calling from Carol Stream. Would you do anything fun today?
No.
Okay. Hey, that's your right to do whatever you want. All right, what's your guess, Teresa?
My guess is file bankruptcy.
File bankruptcy. Another good guess. It's not the answer, though, Teresa. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Great guess, though. See, you did something today. You guessed. That's important. Add it to the list.
Good.
Let's go to Eddie. I'm sorry to hang up on you, Teresa. Let's go to Eddie from Joliet. How you doing, Eddie?
Hi, John. Good to hear you tonight.
Oh, thank you. You have a good day?
I had an awesome day. Two going away parties.
Oh, two going away parties. Where are they going?
One is retiring to South Carolina, and the other is moving to Nebraska.
Oh, well, good for them. That's really exciting. You're sticking with us here in Joliet, though, right, Eddie?
Oh, yeah. yeah, absolutely. I love it here.
All right, so, Eddie, what's your guess? What do 44,000 Americans do a year about?
My guess is legally change your name.
Because that would be around that number, right? Not that many people, but over a whole year. No, that's not the answer, Eddie.
Thank you.
I like these answers more than the actual answer. But that's a really...
Have a great night.
Yeah, you too, Eddie. 312-981-7200. Had a lot of great guesses. Let's go to Mark. Mark, you're calling us from... Is it St. Paul, Minnesota you're calling us from?
Yes, it is, John.
Hey, thanks for calling in. How's the weather in St. Paul? Is it chilly by you guys, too?
Yeah, it's chilly and brisk.
Truly impressed. Well, it's nice. I like that. Fall is finally here, at least in Chicago, our first real chilly weekend. I know you guys in St. Paul have it tougher than us. You probably don't like when we complain about our winters. But Mark, in St. Paul, what did 44,000 Americans do in 2016 as opposed to 76,000 in 2006?
I'm going to say take a case to jury trial.
Like that they take the case? Like an individual person has a case that's on that goes to a jury?
Right, like they settle instead of taking it to trial.
They settle it instead of taking it to trial. That is a great guess, but that is not the correct answer.
Okay.
But Mark, you're on to something there with something. Let's go to Tom. He's in Elmhurst. Tom, you're on the radio, if you don't mind turning me down on the other end. How are you doing today, Tom?
Sure, John. Sure, I'm doing good.
All right,
doing
so well, what you. Is your guess?
My guess is serving on a jury.
We have a winner.
A winner, hey!
Yes!
You know, we have been listening since, like, 4:30. We were in the car, we came home, we ate dinner, we're listening to it, and we're trying to rack our brains here. And finally, all of a sudden, it came to me, and I thought, okay, got to call in.
Yes, and you have done it. And Tom, the prize is, I will represent you in a court of law if you ever need me, okay? You don't want that. I'm not a lawyer.
I don't need that, but okay.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not, hopefully not. No, and I just wanted to just break down the numbers. The most recent federal statistics show that 192,000 people report for jury duty, but approximately 44,000 are selected and impaneled. So, Tom, you're our winner. Thanks so much. I'm glad it paid off all the listening.
Thanks, Chad.
Tom,
have a good night.
From Elmer. Thanks so much. Oh, I feel better after getting the answer out there.
You finally got that out of your system. Jeez.
Roger, you ever made it to a jury or you've been impaneled?
Well, not impaneled, but I did make it to a jury. I think I've gotten like maybe three in my lifetime jury calls.
Summons, okay.
And two, one of them I sat around all day, did nothing.
All right.
And left.
Mm-hmm.
Another one.
You're good at that.
Well, I work every day
right now
in the rocking chair. And the second one, they called me off before I had to go in.
Ah, okay.
Like they must have cleared their dockets or whatever. Yeah. But
oh,
I did
okay.
sit in on one. I did have to go in for jury selection. And it was a medical malpractice suit.
Oh,
so
you got the exciting one. Oh.
Yeah. So my wife's a nurse. One of my cousins it was a pediatrician. Another cousin was a lawyer. And I wasn't working in radio as a news person at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was teaching it, but I got in it and I said I listed those reasons, the relatives,
mm-hmm.
and I said, and I don't trust doctors.
And they were probably like,
and
get out of here.
So one of the lawyers called the other one with the judge into the back room. You can go into the door in the little hallway.
Uh-huh.
Within 30 seconds, they came back and said, see ya.
You created a sidebar. Roger
I
Mattis,
did.
The reason for a sidebar. Good to hear from you, Roger.
You
we
too, buddy. Always
that.
A pleasure.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, next week we're on Saturday night, 6 to 8 p.m. We'll be a little bit later because of the Northwestern football game. Thank you so much for listening today to Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Hope you're a little bit smarter, not because of me, but because of our wonderful guests. News next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.